Michael and I would like to welcome you back to another recording of the Saturn Earth Connection. Our website is helloearth.info, and today is Tuesday, July 28th, 2015. This is our 276 with Michael from Maui, Hawaii. Michael was taken to a huge luminescent sphere near Saturn as a student visitor and returned to Maui with their amazing flowing dialogue. And occasionally we hear from Shaharon using Michael to transmit his voice into the recording. And I want to thank James from North Wales, Pennsylvania. I appreciate you, James, for helping to host the hours we've recorded with Michael. Hello, Michael.
Hello, Curtis.
Hello. Well, welcome back from the top of Haleakala.
Yeah, I'll be going there more and more often now.
Oh, you really?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's just some of the things I got to do.
Mm-hmm. First thing I said before we started recording today, I said, oh, how was Haleakala up there? Oh, it's cold.
It gets cold. It was, some snow on Mauna Kea, which is way out of season. So,
wow.
But, you know, this is the hot time of year, right? So, what's snow doing on top of the mountains?
Yeah, what's snow doing up there? Didn't last long, though.
No, but the jet stream moves around and drops down low and it's doing the hula.
Mm-hmm.
You know, swaying back and forth, up and down.
Yeah, J.S. sent me a photograph of them building a telescope back in the 90s up on Manoa.
Manoa?
Yeah, it said Manoa.
Oh.
Which, well, that's in my mail.
Mauna Loa, maybe. Mauna Loa.
Well, it could be Mauna Loa, but it just said Manoa. Well, that was a few days ago.
Yeah.
But anyway, I guess they're going to start building that telescope anyway. Too bad. Yeah. Destroy, here it is. It does say Mauna Kea. Okay, I didn't even...
Yeah, Mauna Kea years
ago. Mauna Kea. Where did I see it say? Oh, here's where it says. This is one of the many reasons people are up there protecting the Manoa. What does that mean? The Subaru telescope, built in the early 90s. 1990s. But, they just want to look into the stars, and I wish they would look at what's out there near Saturn.
Yeah. Well, there's a new slant on this idea about the thing, and as I said, years and years ago, there was funding coming in with American Communist Party to stop the bombing at Kaho'olawe during the Vietnam War period time. You know, people's lives were lost. Bombing continued until the war was over. So it was a national security item, but there was definitely funding coming in from that kind of sources for their own purposes. However, one of the things about the Mauna Kea, is an ideal, you know, American-based, U.S.-based location, one of the better ones, maybe if not the best. U.S.-based location for a telescope of that design, you know, and power. However, when people did a little bit more research, they realized that 25% of the funding is coming from mainland China. China is actually involved in it. And another 25% from Russia. And of course, they would like to get it in a location that they could have more control over it. And they are using whatever means they can. This is another concept or idea that it is not purely, you might say, pure work of protecting heritage and cultural right and things like that. It's actually using it for other more internationally, you know, political means, you know, because it's supposed to be an open telescope. It's supposed to be for everybody, for the world. But, you know, they're trying to do what they can because the alternative site is other places like anywhere else in the world. And all of those are not U.S. territory.
Yeah, like Chile.
Chile, Peru, other places, yeah. Even not necessarily even in the North America. So that's just one of the things that came up out of this. I know China is still very interested in possessing Hawaii, like, but they haven't any deal that was made like with Hong Kong. Hong Kong was turned back to China. Britain turned it back because they had that deal. And of course, you see what's going on over there with certain problems that they have in the just running things over there, yeah. In Hong Kong. China gets involved again, mainland China, well, which is their real, you know, ownership, I guess, of Hong Kong. Anyway, these kinds of ideas are just, you know, going around, so it's not more of the most well-known one I'm talking about, but it's one of the other slants on what could very well be happening. So you got to look at it at multiple angles, you know, because from my experience, there has definitely been in the past these kinds of implication in trying to stop things, using people and culture to disrupt the activity and perhaps putting it to an end, because it went through all the necessary hearings and testimonies and back and forth and cultural things, and it went through a lot. Why at this point is this all of a sudden happening? You know. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Last week we were talking about without a telescope revealing the solar system, and Chaperon came on, and
Last time, yeah.
Yeah, he was there until the phone rang. They don't have telephones up on the New Jerusalem.
As a matter of fact, they have other means of extremely long distance communication devices.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was he came on early in the recording. That was really different.
Yeah, I've had a chat with him recently. But he started talking in language I didn't fully understand. In English, of course. So I started writing it down. It was concerning, you know, as we, you know, the entire world has many major religions or faiths, all concerned with the human destiny, what happens to a person after they die. We're trying to we know a person is born and then they go through life and then they die. This is my huge complaint about the purpose of life. And it was the great call that I had out to the universe. And the reception it was received, and then the whole journey and unveiling came about in bringing the story of the New Jerusalem. The fact that we are just one very young part of an expanding universe of sentient beings, of people. And I looked at it in concept and said, there's so many other people. You know, you got people of partially, every faith has only part, is only partly correct. It has in itself only a partial understanding. And it's good enough, because the first step is the most important one, the choice to go and do this choice that we have. But it's not well known. And different faiths give different methodologies. And one of them was those things that I remember as having to lead people through was something in Christian circles called the sinner's prayer. But it's not ubiquitous through all Christian faiths and or even in other faiths. But it's more like the Apostle Paul declared that one must accept that Jesus Christ is Lord and Savior, and make basically say a prayer of acceptance of His Lordship. Then I started to receive this message. It came out this way. It says, the divine prerogative of ascension is immutable. The immutable prescription of the human ascension career cannot be dispensed with simple words. This one sentence was the answer in part. And it went on to say, but it is the everlasting right of every human being today that this choice is yours to make and to live the conjugated divine nature of human to the divine. This is, in other words, it's saying it's a lot more than words. It's our entire life. And that our living is so important. The conjugated, the conjugate of both human and divine is this joining, conjoiningness. Not a freakish thing, but a developmental prerogative. That word prerogative means something like a special right. You know, it's like a, you know, inalienable right, you know, concept. It's a divinely given right for every human being to be able to make this choice. And then to live the conjugated role or life within the ascension career. Wow. So I was thinking, I'm using fancy words here. Because they were so fancy for me, so I just started to write them down. It's not how I talk. I talk like this. It's kind of different. Different when it starts to try to give you an answer and it comes out this way. It goes on to go, he went on to say, and he goes on to say, to conjugate both the human and the divine natures into our completely new variants of the living expression in a kaleidoscopic and absolutely divine way and nature. To perfuse the symmetry of both the human and the divine, embellished by the vicissitudes of our living, or your living, but it was brought to me that way. So it's sort of fancy, huh? So this came to me, and I had to write it down because it's getting like, what are you talking to me about? So it sounds almost like the Yurancha language, Yurancha book language. But that is really an answer to my question. Is it enough for a person to just bear oath through what we call the sinner's prayer, or through any form? But it basically goes on to say it's really living. Even the vicissitudes of living, these many, many trials and works and different pressures and choices and every kind of thing that will basically, he said, it's kaleidoscopic. You know what kaleidoscopic means, right?
I know what a kaleidoscope is. Kaleidoscopic?
Yeah, yeah, kaleidoscopic.
Many different views.
Views, exactly.
Yeah.
And these views are actually quite beautiful. And these are the things that is recognized, because one of the things about the divine nature, at a higher level divine nature, we are able to be read much like a book. You know, and this is one of the things I gathered really quickly being with these celestial beings. And I'm talking about the higher level ones. Their telepathic understanding of you is very, very fluid. They easily understand. They bear your image. You know, our life, you know, people talked about, I remember some ministers saying how, you know, we have a wonderful crown of righteousness, a gown of great majesty and glory to be given to us beyond. But this is really what it's all about. This Mirancha development of the soul is something that is really a radiance that is what they are able to see and realize upon our life's, you know, individual nature, but one that radiates the embellishments, you know, from our life, you know, perfusing the symmetry of both the human and divine. Perfusing meaning to really embed into our nature, a new and living way, is many of the customary words that were given to the born again experience. But being with these celestial beings, they see you. So, you know, when we are seen as we are known, the truth is that we will be recognized by what we are known by. Maybe not our physical appearance, because that physical appearance may very well change, as it did with Jesus Christ's resurrection experience. Even his disciples didn't recognize him. They recognized him by his personality and his references, and even his perhaps telepathic inferences. These things are what is developed. So, you know, people are terrified sometimes thinking about, wow, you know, it's these celestial beings or these aliens, supposedly, they're just like us, they're monsters, you know. You know, having been with the ones that I were with, these are the ones who are faithful and true to the primary purpose. And that primary purpose of the human mortals, or the mortals, which is called human, actually, we're not the only humans around, but mortals, isn't it the immutable? Immutable. It's a divine prerogative, divine right of ascension, and an immutable prescription of human ascension. That prescription is to really have that to be given out freely, not, you know, through divisiveness or held on by specific doctrines and teachings. Although many of them will lead down the path toward the same goal. And that's why many times it's not necessarily corrected by the celestial, because it is enough to lead the person the right way. And this is what I return to discover, among many other things, including our own abilities, having, you know, to discover technology, wrapped up in a lot of technology and wonder I'm amazed at the movement of how much we've ascended technology. You know, at one time, you know, the age before the information age was the age of industrialization. And when you look at industrialization, the capture of energy and the use of energy to give the human more freedom in expression in their lives is for this purpose, for the embellishment to the vicissitudes of living toward, you know, really a much more beautiful appearance in the celestial realm. And that beautiful appearance is one that makes people interested in you. You know, are we purely individuals for the purpose of being just like the angels? Actually, we're not. We are actually destined to be more than the angels, more than many of the citizens that already dwell within the domain. That's why we have assistants who, through our life vicissitudes, gain their nature enrichment, their enrichment, and our benefit is to our benefit. That's why it's so important that we move in our lives with this awareness, a continual awareness of the divine prerogative, the divine right, specially ordered and commissioned for the individual human being, not just on our planet, but we are concerned with ourselves here. So therefore, it's our, the human prerogative of ascent and the choice. And when that choice is made to live lives many different ways, to different choices, to become a truly divine being, and the solutions to many life's challenges will come our way and are made easily if we would but understand how things work in the realm of the divine. In the realm of resource and development, if you look at your one's life and you say, well, if it's just finance and money that makes our life real and enriched, then the rich people should be the ones who have the greatest enrichment and fulfilled lives. And when you do study and come to know people who many times have a lot, you find out that their lives are empty. They're continually enslaved by their wealth, and they no longer are able to enrich themselves in life experience that is something that challenges their nature and brings real character into their being, and is part of the process of conjugating both the human and divine nature in a personality. And this is something that is quite amazing when you see it's not, you know, having a lot of money that will make the experience successful. It's maybe the opposite. Having maybe not enough or a little bit, and continuously enriching one's choices, the vicissitudes of life's experiences, having many angles and many, you know, viewpoints into the kaleidoscopic career of one's life. And this is a kind of a way in which, Ryan, I tell you, it's like, I think I better write this down because it's getting a little heavy. So I'm trying to untangle this for everyone. But What do you think about that, Curtis?
Well, this detail to be more like the angels, isn't that what they want us to be like them?
Actually,
I mean,
greater than the angels.
Greater than the angels.
Yeah.
How could we be greater than them when we're already starting out on the wrong side of the tracks?
No, we're not. We're starting out on the track. The whole message that was given is what? This ascension career is the very reason for us being. Therefore, if it wasn't necessary, why create us? Why would it be that you take from the base variant, and you look at our genetics, first of all. The genetics is always a mix. You know, you don't have all these clones. You know, this procreative process will be cloning. It's not cloning. It always has the differences. It's, you know, the genetic variances, because you take the genome half from the parent, you know, from each parent. And of course you have we know the weaknesses of trying to go around cloning, and then, you know, we had a plant here on the island. It was cloned from one plant, and you could see it, you know, being used in everybody's hedgerows, because it was a tall plant. It would grow quite tall, and again, it was pretty much cloned from one plant. And then a blight came over that hit that particular plant. And every single one of all the hedgerows around, every single plant that made up those hedgerows died at the same time. That was an extreme difference. Yeah. Where others, which were, of course, not necessarily cloned from one stock, had the variances in them, because you know, they had multiple origins or different. They were not cloned. In other words, made by cuttings the same parent stock. They were seed, you know, in different germinations, and of course they ended up having enough variances. But you pretty much see, wow, the almost wipes them out, and then they don't all die. Some survive, and then it. So you might say that, could that be just that purpose? That we will be more durable, more long-lasting, in if we gain the proper nature, the proper or the more durable, the more I guess a kind of a nature which is much more maybe even flexible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that is able to, you know, kind of get around things, like, you know, like this example of one particular cloned plant that was popular for a while, and when a blight comes, they're all dead, all gone, no more. You don't see one plant like that on the island anymore.
That's a shame.
Well, that's just one of the weaknesses of the concept. So, of, you know, taking and cloning. And, you know, I often thought about cloning and looking at the Dorians, all look exactly alike. You know, I says, wow, you know, yeah, there's a certain weakness in that, you know. So they don't have the exact power and procreative ability that our, you know, nature, I guess you might say, our human ability, you know, allows us. And when you put that together, with that divine prerogative of the conjugate process between the divine nature and the human nature to create this new nature. It almost looks like that it was purposely put there for the purpose that the individual who makes the choice finds his ascension process deliberate, but then through his own life's, I guess the word vicissitudes, different variances and situations, and, you know, both good and bad, end up enriching the character and personality of this, I guess, unique individual, which makes this unique individual much more than, you might say, many of those who are considered angels, you know, which could very well have been considered by the Dorian group, these, you know, absolutely identical people. And I could see, you know, why something over a long period of time may have been just a survival technique used by a particular advanced civilization to continue themselves. But then it finds its weakness. That was a real shock to me. I mean, like, meeting the Dorians more than one time, conversing with them, and having been corrected by them, and then actually being able to stare at them for a long time, really sunk into me. Yeah, I mean, he's sitting right next to me, you know.
Yes.
And, you know, you got three of them.
And
or
you
got
to look at them really close.
You look at them, and it's, maybe he's got a little bit different from the other guy. You know, what was different was their personality. There was a little, it was quite a different. One was much more gentle. The other one was more, like, forceful. And, you know, we're not that either. You know, which when I started to say, you know, you might be a kind of halfway in between, you know, a hermaphrodite or something. We're not that either. In other words, hermaphrodite is a sort of a, still has a male-female concept to it. And when he says, he said that he was not that either in a very stern way, that meant it was different, which meant more toward cloning. And again, I did talk about seeing some of the results of and weaknesses of cloning. And then you have a kind of a problem in a sense that it doesn't continue very long. It ultimately ends someplace. So the human race is actually more powerful in that way of merging the divine nature and the human nature together in this, you know, new being. And that's what is talked about, was taught to me. But the that process doesn't simply get dispensed with, in other words, given out or received or done simply by a oath or a sinner's prayer. It's much more than that. Yeah. And then, of course, you get divine guidance. And divine guidance is really a benefit because it comes from additional sources of and perspectives. And again, that kaleidoscopic characteristic of having taken the ascension prerogative and made it yours in true living is something that is like really, really, really an advantage. And even walking away from, you know, things, you know. I just gave away a piece of land. It's about 15,000 square feet, was it? 10,000, and a little bit more than, yeah, a little bit more than a quarter acre. Just gave it away. Yeah, but it had to find the right person, and when it was found, wow, it all is going to work out. It's going to work out well. And this is somehow the way in which sometimes you think, wow, if you know, the solution is more money, or the solution, no, sometimes the solution is just giving it away. And, you know, this is where that opens up freedom in another area. Like I said, some of these rich guys, all their time is spent in their lives enslaved to their wealth, because they have a company or they have some kind of thing they have to protect, and they're always there doing that. They're never away from it. They're never free from it. And therefore, their life's journey is very limited. It's like the same thing multiplied by that many years. I remember having someone tell me, you know, when it comes down to looking at some of these resumes, and they look like, wow, this guy got 12 years of something experience in this in a certain kind of field, and it says, they got 1 year of experience and times 12. So what they was basically looking for, it says, I want to get the most bang for my buck. And if this guy has this kind of experience, that kind of experience, various sort of experience, and they're all over a year, 2 years, 3 years experience, this is a very valuable person, much more than someone doing the same old thing over and over. And that's much like a person's life who's stuck in a rut. And that rut may be enslaving himself to the financial journey, which is falling apart quick right now. Even our currencies are going to be seeing challenges that have never been seen for a long time, at the level in which they'll be challenged. Yeah.
And you said you gave away some land?
Yeah, I just gave it away. It's in process right now.
Is this land close by you, or is this somewhere else?
Oh, it's on the Big Island of Hawaii.
Oh, the Big Island.
Yeah. It's not the best. Of course, it's not like choice land, mm-hmm. but it's land in which this person apparently needed to build himself a home, but I couldn't clear it. It's not valuable. But I needed the right person to give it to, because it'd just be a problem.
I see.
To other people, you know.
Yeah, but the right person, it really
the right person
was
will
magical.
Solve the problems for myself and the other people, you know, who are challenged by the nature of it, which I don't care about. It's been around. It's like not like I went out and purposely bought it. It was something that happened with bankruptcies and settlements. You don't want it, but it gets given to you.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, then you look at that and you, oh, well, it's stuck with this. Better than nothing. And then years go by and then you'll make up the losses already, so it's no big deal.
Yeah, well, a friend of mine the other day, he told me, he said, I used to be a giver. I mean, I used to be a taker, and now I'm a giver.
Yeah, that's...
I give everything away.
Yeah. Give everything away. That's an interesting phenomenon in many people's lives.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's one of the ways that a person becomes more divine.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, that's nice to hear. One of the ways a person becomes more divine.
Yeah, yeah. To be able to be used as a tool of divine work. But it can be dangerous if one takes it out, because there are other teachings running around within the circle of, circle of actual Christian faith, where they take teaching that's hidden in Scripture and said, well, if it's in Scripture and you apply it, then you're bound. Well, the idea is that they give away so much and they expect manifold in return. Well, to a degree that may happen, but if it's not done with, you know, with the intent of doing it, being told to you to do, and you're simply being obedient to it, then it is of your design, and it may not be of the divine way. This is one of the things I gathered by simply the Dano walking in front of him, because I wanted the answer to the purpose of life. And he wasn't going to give it to me until I was ready. And then it wasn't going to come from his mouth.
Good.
I didn't know any of that.
Yeah.
You know, just all he did was tell me, walk in front of me. Walk in front of me. He didn't point. He just said, walk in front of me. Mm-hmm. And one of those big guys, you know, those guys like 8 or 9 feet tall.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And he tells me, yo, he wants you to go up there, walk in front. Okay. So I get up and I walk in front of him. And not just one time, just back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Pretty soon the questions, why am I doing this? This is what's strange. All of these things left my mind. And all I wanted to do was walk in front of him, go back and forth, back and forth. Then he said, ah, now you're perfect.
Mm.
Come with me. In other words, there was pure obedience in there. Not wondering how it works, why, what this is for, blah, blah, blah. What he was reading with me, in within me, was this pure obedience, willingness to do, even if you don't understand. So anyway, it ended up with a really mighty revelation that our and all life is for the purpose of the ascent experience, to become as him, a being of pure light, you know, and everlasting. To become as I am. Whoa. See him, and it's like, whoa. It's not made out of the same kind of stuff I am.
So the Sharons have known you since the early 70s then, or maybe before, but that's when you said you were out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I have had to be put within the realm of forgetfulness. It's not really remember the full experience, because it would have removed some of the choice vicissitudes of living, you know, that would embellish, you know, enrich the appearance of, you know, my divine nature, what could be seen by them. And after that was attained a certain point, then it was free to become a tool of the Sharons, to become, you might say, a human ambassador of the light, enlightenment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that it wouldn't be the voice of, because human beings would not listen to them. You know, at one point or another would end up just saying that they're not to be feared and run away from and not obeyed, and they would become the enemy and every kind of problem like that. So anyway, that's a little conversation I had that was a little bit more sophisticated than I anticipated.
Well, this thing about you being obedient and walking in front of the Dainal.
Mm-hmm.
And they saw that you just walked back and forth and you did what he wanted. And
a simple thing.
Simple things. This simple thing didn't seem to work very well with Riley.
Well, that's why he didn't receive it all. You know, I went to the highest authority there. Mm-hmm. And the highest authority, even according to Urantia book, here, you know, local system orbiting, you know, solar system,
mm-hmm.
is the most high Veranda Deck observers. Two of them for a fallen area. Veranda Decks, actually, the most highs, actually have much larger areas in their function when it is in a system that is, you know, operating correctly. But a system that is in confusion and continually having challenges, they have to be involved. And sometimes they do get involved with the affairs of men in order to preserve the, you might say, the base mortal who is precious for that divine development of both the human nature and the divine nature. They called it the conjugate experience, the conjugated, what was it now? Here it is, someplace here. I said, why is this conjugate? Both the human and the divine is joining together. It's more than that. That word encompasses many different variants of joining, not only, you know, one thing or another. Join a piece of rope together, just tie a knot and put them together. But it's like putting together the rope as if it never had a joint. Can you imagine? Splice, but no splice.
Yeah, I can imagine, but I can't.
It's like
you can't do it.
It never was broken.
Yeah,
you know,
no.
That's conjugate. You know, it's like putting it together. Like you break a piece of rope or a fishing line, and you take this fishing line. And we all, as fishermen, know these fishermen knots, especially to join two pieces of line together,
because
mm-hmm. you want to put it together strong so it doesn't break at the knot, break somewhere else. So you learn these fancy knots, but you still have a knot. The most strongest part of the fishing line is the part that never broke, right? And when you conjugate it together, the two lines actually become as if it was never broken.
Even though they were right next to the break.
Yeah, you can't. Well, where's the knot? How did you do that? Ah, that's the mystery. This is the level of which they were trying to explain it to me, getting kind of fancy with their words. But, you know, explaining to me a little bit more about, sometimes, you know, there's much more involved. In my ministry experience, I always had that gap. It says, yeah, this is just the first step, but you know, people walk away from that with great joy, the experience of accepting Jesus Christ as Lord and Savior of their lives. But I often wonder, you know, what happens beyond that? You know, I can teach them Bible stories and sayings and teachings from the New Testament, Old Testament, and all of that stuff. But where is the more? And you know, this is where this kinds of wisdom that comes from the divine sources try to help us realize the ascent is really every bit of our lives, but not to become a monk in the mountain or, you know, some other kind of, you know. They built these monasteries on the tops of the mountain, locked away. What for? You know, there was some good because they preserved some holy texts and things like that. But not everything was, you know, for that purpose to become hidden. In fact, I'm trying not to be hidden, but, you know, they made it possible in the right time, seeing the right time when people can just tune in when they want and get a little bit more. And I do go to the mountaintops, but that's not, you know, it's a lot easier now than before. Yeah.
Michael, do you think, well, I'm sorry to interrupt you.
Go ahead.
When you said that Daniel asked you to walk in front of, he said, walk in front of me. And you'd walk in front of him and you walked. And
yeah.
I guess he didn't say, keep walking or.
No, he just
let you go, right?
Just let me go.
And just to see what you'd do.
No, I did stop and stutter and look, you know, well, he's kept me just waiting on me. So I keep on walking. And pretty soon all of these, what is this for? What is this all about? All of those things started to, it's not important.
Well,
he said that I want the answer. I want the answer. And I want it so badly that if I got to do this all day, all night, whatever, I'll just walk. It's simple. I can walk back and forth. Yeah.
Do you think they did that with Riley? They asked him to walk in front of me, and he was not the obedient kind.
Well, yeah. Well, Riley, you know, they accept. That's a good thing about Riley is that I noticed they accept every human being at the level they're at. You know, as long you are moving yourself away from the base animal nature. But if you only can get so far away from it, well, that's okay. You'll be led to a higher realm eventually, but everybody at their own pace. Yeah, so it's not like his pace was wrong. It's just that's the way it is, and it was necessary. In fact, you know what? Jesus Christ had a predecessor. His name was John the Baptist. And he said something interesting about John the Baptist. And John the Baptist actually baptized Jesus Christ in the river. Okay? Mm-hmm. And baptism has some early origins about cleansing. Yeah? And the idea of cleansing and submission and cleansing. Well, performing that act, many of his disciples, John's disciples, John the Baptist's disciples, became the disciples of Jesus Christ. They ended up following him. But he says something. He was the least in the kingdom of heaven is greater than John. What was he referring to? The imperfect message that he had. The imperfect message. It wasn't complete, but it was in a direction. So those who are able to make the ascent journey and make that with full commitment to in one their own expression, one way or the other, will eventually ascend to a point of enlightenment far greater than even in the least amount of information. So having peered in to some of the realm, and now we have given to the human race something that was approved by the Dano. In fact, you know, the one who Riley calls Nela, Oni Seovan, she said, what have you learned? And I, before going back, coming back to Earth, what have you learned? And I said, this, that, et cetera. But I also was given insight to a book on Earth. And I described the book, and she pulled it from the shelf. She actually opened the wall, and behind it was all books and stuff. So she had what, you know, looks like an ordinary shelf with books on it. And pulled that book out. But then she made a comment. She says, well, he wasn't supposed to let you know about things on, well, about he's a Dano, and he can do what he can choose to do. He has much higher, you know, prerogative, or he has more freedom or latitude to do something like that. So to verify the Urantia book as being an important book in human hands is something that he did. He didn't put down the Holy Bible. He just said some of the information is in the Holy Bible, but a lot more is in the Urantia book. Yeah, so, but there's even more out there. Of course, it's only that book is got a lot, but it's not the most, every detail in there, you know, just monumental. Make our life's journey very, very still, you know, a collectivity of multiple insights into the composite wisdom of our nature.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Nella thought that Daniel should not have showed you
For her, it was something she couldn't do.
Oh, it sounded almost like she was surprised he did it.
Yeah, she was surprised. She was surprised that he pointed me that way. Yeah.
Well, it's very interesting that he did, because to have that book here on our shelves is quite a connection.
Yeah. Because I think what she was hinting at was he's not supposed to invent another religion, which can happen, you know, with a Urantia following. And it can have a whole hierarchy of those who know more about the Urantia book than others and this and that, and it create this hierarchy. Mm-hmm. Next thing you know, you have another kind of religion. You know, it's not supposed to come out of that.
Well,
and this, maybe I'm contributing it to be not like another kind of, another religion.
It may be a good idea if it did.
A more perfect way.
Yeah, but there's a lot of religions.
Yeah, but the more perfect way is actually that living way, which is pointed out about the embellishment, the embellishment of our lives through the vicissitudes of living. You know, that's the kind of, whoa. Okay, fancy words, man. Okay. So
it almost sounds like we're supposed to learn as we go, which is what we've done.
Yeah, it's...
I mean, how else can we do it? We can't learn before we start.
Yeah. It says, to perfuse the symmetry of both the human and divine. So, you know, what is symmetry? When you look at nature, you see symmetry in many things, right?
Yeah, when there's two trees standing beside each other and they're both the same kind of trees, they look alike.
They look alike. You get a leaf,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then there's a symmetry because there's got a stem down the middle and half of it looks like the other half. Look at us.
Quite similar.
Yeah, divide us, our bodies, right, left. The symmetry there.
Yes, symmetry there.
And use the word, you know, to perfuse the symmetry, perfusing the symmetry. What is perfusing?
Perfusing.
To actually to make kind of like, wow, perfuse. You know, I didn't choose words like that, but do.
I don't know if profusing.
Yeah.
I'm looking, I see professing. I don't see profusing. I have that pH.
To diffuse through or over.
Oh, here it is, yeah.
Yeah, profuse. So it's just this like human and divine nature is like are mixed in this palette of wonderful color, perfused, and that's what they can see too. They can see your nature, your level of development. They don't count you, you know, as they know where you're at. Yeah. And there are others, I think perhaps they were alien mortals.
Alien what? Mortals?
Mortals, yeah.
Alien mortals?
Yeah, they're mortalists like us.
Uh-huh.
You know, you shoot them, they die. Or, you know, they're... And I was put together with this alien mortal, and I was discussing his appearance. And I said, where did your ears go? And I said, what are those things on the side of your head? And I said, ears? Now I have seen, yeah, see right here? He had a little hole in the side of his head. That's how I hear, okay. What do you need those things on the side of your head for? Oh, hear better. This is the dumbest thing, but he, you know, he was quite different, you know. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But could actually have a kind of Riley Martin kind of conversation with him. Nitty gritty, down to earth, whatever. Just talk to him. And he was at a level of development that wasn't very high in terms of his, you might say, divine attainment. You know, he was somewhere along the line of being like a perhaps middle school kid.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So we've got divine guidance and the Dano wanting to see who you are by asking you to walk in front of him. Is that what he was doing, seeing who you are? Or seeing if you
were ready,
you were, or ready, if seeing if ready you were ready enough.
Yeah. And I only had that one question. I had my second question to the veranda deck was, how do I attain this?
Mm-hmm.
But before I could ask it, he walked backwards. He just moved backwards away from me, and then I was ushered out of the place, not being able to find the answer from the mouth of, or from, you know, being given insight from the veranda deck. The Dano gave me the insight. Go back and live, and you will be given more. And it's still happening all along the way.
The Dano, can you pick one of the characters that, or one of the celestials that Riley spoke about? I don't know. He never really spoke about a Dano.
No, because he didn't meet him. Mm-hmm. In order to you've got to make first grade, so. First grade is where you start getting the answers to the enlightenment process. Riley was shown different beings, people, and was given insight from primarily Tan. And Tan was a very intellectual guy, and stories. But only to say that we exist, they exist. They are, you know, working, they have an order, they have other people there. But the class on celestial insight and development, for him, I didn't really go to that level.
He did see
later that he had offspring, kids,
mm-hmm.
that were being trained up from birth in the higher levels of development. So genetically he had shared his genome, genetics, to perhaps, maybe it might have been hybrid, it might I think it was somewhat hybrid. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But he may never have had that, desire to find the purpose of life. It's actually haven't you ever asked yourself that question? What is the purpose of living?
Yes.
I think everybody has, yeah.
Yes.
I think so, one way or another.
Oh, yeah. When things are up or down, people ask that question to themselves.
Yeah.
What's this all about?
Yeah, what's this all about?
Why did this happen?
Yeah.
And how did this happen?
Yeah. Within the context of this, there's also this, why do bad things happen to good people? Mm-hmm. You know, and first of all, what is good and what is bad? That's another general. You have to look at it from the eternal perspective, past the mortal life experience. And then you see, wow, what an interesting story. You ever look at some of the dramas about people's lives? You know, whether it be somebody's biography, mm-hmm. or, you know, and then, or some drama about a portion of their life. And you think, wow, it was tough for being this way or being, you know, in... what was her name about the one she was? What was her name?
Omnek Onik?
No. I mean, really, she was blind and she couldn't hear. And
Helen Keller?
Helen Keller, you know, that's a drama of a person. And then there are so many others that are not, you know, born with limits in their sensory ability,
but,
you know, challenges in their life. So the answer, of course, comes down to the rich embellishments that are made into a person's actual beauty. Because one of the important things in the development of divine symmetry is the beauty that is seen by these celestials. And they want to volunteer for helping some person ascend, make the ascension, with a really beautiful and divine nature, as well as maintaining their human nature and personality. So we don't, you know, we don't remain the same. That's how we displace many of the fallen ones, who would accept worship from the basically mortal human creature. Those beings who do that do not respect the ascent process because they limit it to themselves as being the highest beings around. And there are human beings right now who have told me, square to my face, and said, I can do what I like. I can do whatever I want. When you're God, like I am, you can do anything. So get back to your work.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in about 3 months, he was out of the company. You don't tell the things like that to someone who bears truth. But I was amazed that a person could say that, you know, and just say they're God, you know. And there are lots of people running around that way.
There are a lot of people like that.
Yeah. They're just human beings now. Mortal beings.
Oh, yeah, they're all human beings.
But the ones who are more angelic, you know. Well, you know, one of the things that you say imperfect was, you know, when the declaration from the Dano, after what got me from the declaration that stopped me from walking back and forth was, stop, you are, no, you're perfect. Yeah, he declared me perfect. You know, and then he said, come up here. Stop. You're perfect. Come up here. Come up here. So, yeah. And well, it's almost like you're ready to learn. You're ready to learn. You're ready to get more information.
Yeah, I love getting information.
Yeah.
You have to be a receiver to get the information. These people who are just transmitters, they don't stop transmitting and listen. To learn something, they already know what they're talking about, but they need to listen and grow with whatever it is.
Yeah.
But this is a wild place, this planet, and then when they try and feel that we are, they want to make us better than they are, that's a stretch, but I'm glad they're trying to. That's good.
That's a stretch. Yeah. Yeah. But we have someone that laid the path out for us.
Mm-hmm.
And he actually ended up being known as the universe creator, who became a human being.
Well, this is all marvelous to hear, putting these pieces together and seeing how they match.
Well, yeah. They kind of go hand in hand with the selective revelations within the Old Testament, New Testament Bible, the Rancha book. But when it comes right down to it, we got to live life with that revelation in mind. And understand and especially hope for the divine or the ascending sons to come and help us along the way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They won't make our lives perfectly easy, but it make it, you might say, more beautiful and enriched.
Well, becoming more perfect is certainly making us more enriched.
Yeah.
And getting us closer to our real purpose here on this planet.
Yeah.
Which we all want to have our purpose fulfilled while we're here. And I've heard people wonder about that.
Uh-huh.
But we are running through our time, which is okay, but let's say aloha and continue next week.
Okay.
And are you going to be up on the mountain next Tuesday, or you don't know?
No, I don't plan to. It was just a scheduled, specialized key people to be up there at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I know what you mean. All right.
Okay.
Aloha, Michael.
Okay. Aloha.
Aloha.